right. Thank you, John. Well, good evening. How are you all? Good, good. Oh, that was really weak. The long day. As John said, I'm Jay Tremblay. I'm the stewardship pastor here. And stewardships, people go, what's stewardship? I don't understand what you do. And I don't understand what I do either. Actually, I take care of all of the finances here. Take care of and oversee all of the volunteers, the adult volunteers that are in the first contact ministries, greeters, ushers, parking lot, those things. In charge of communications to the church, as well as facility scheduling, administrative functions, kind of the office manager, anything that doesn't fit into another little box of a ministry comes my way. So oversee several different areas. I've got a great team that works with me. I've got three people that work with me that help me out and make me look good on a daily basis. But I've been here at Grace Chapel 16 years now, going to the church, and I've been on staff as of yesterday 10 years. Yesterday is my 10-year anniversary. Yay! absolutely love it. When I first came on staff, I was the small groups pastor. And then after about a year, our administrative pastor at the time, Ron Klontz, moved back to Arizona to take care of his parents, and I inherited all of his functions as well as life groups. So I was doing basically everything I'm doing today plus life groups and was failing miserably because I just didn't have the bandwidth to do it all. So after a couple of years, we split it out. I took stewardship and we hired Myron as the small groups pastor at the time. Absolutely love what I do. Every day is different. It's wonderful. My wife, Patty, works here as well. She's Pastor Steve and Pastor Mark's assistant. If you went through the membership class, you may have met her then. We have two children, Natalie and Nathan. Natalie is 24. She is one of the youth, the middle school ministry leaders. If any of you have kids in the middle school ministry, you might know her as Raffle Rhonda, if they've come home and talked about her a little bit. And then my son Nathan's 20 years old. He's going to school and working part-time as well. But we moved out here from California. I was born and raised out there, and we moved out here in 1998. So we've been out here almost 18 years now. A little bit about my background. I like to tell people that I was born and raised Catholic because you don't have a choice. Any ex-Catholics in here? Raised Catholics? Okay, so you understand what I'm saying. I was baptized or christened at 1 month, so I had no choice in the matter. I went through 13 years of Catholic school, and all throughout that time, I was just questioning. I'm very grateful for my Catholic background, very grateful. That was where I was first introduced to Jesus. But the whole time, I just really had a check in my spirit of, why in the world do I need to talk to a priest to talk to God? How can the priest absolve me from my sins? Isn't God the one that's supposed to do that? So really struggled with that growing up. And once I got out of high school, I just stopped going to church. My parents split, and it was just didn't want to go anymore. So fast forward a couple of years, and I met my wife, who was a Free Will Baptist. So I went to her church for the first time. I'm like, oh my word, what is this? Because I was used to a very liturgical 45-minute service where you're up, down, kneel, say a couple prayers, and you're out, because there's really no teaching involved. There's a very short homily, which is just reflecting on the scripture of the day, and that was it. So when I went to her church, and it was like a half an hour of worship and 45 minutes of teaching, I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. People were raising their hands. I'm like, what in the world? Didn't understand it at all. So after we got married in the Catholic Church, we got married, and then we didn't go to church, because neither of us wanted to go to each other's church. She didn't want to go to mine. I didn't want to go to hers. And then fast forward a couple of years, our daughter was born, and we decided, you know what, we really need to start going to church. So we did. She went to her church. I went to my church. Yeah, so you know how that goes. Not very well. So God got a hold of me, and it's like, you know what, you need to go to church with your wife. So I submitted, and I started going to the Baptist church with her. And during that time, we went to a worship service one day, and the only seats available were in the front row. So walk all the way up to the front row with my wife's parents, sit down, and the worship leader was like singing right to me. I mean, this far away, and I was like, oh, I am so uncomfortable. I got so uncomfortable, I got up and I left. Left my wife there with her parents. I was young. And went and sat in the back row of the balcony by myself. Sat up there and just pouted, and you know. And little by little, throughout that message over the next 45 minutes, God got a hold of me. I was like, "What in the world are you doing? Your wife needs you." And it was a great salvation message. And they had an altar call at the end of the service, and I walked down in front of my wife and her parents right there and gave my life over to the Lord. So,
how old were you?
How old was I? 1993, 25. Yeah, 25 years old at the time, and haven't looked back since. Just absolutely love the Lord, love what Pastor Steve and the other pastors here are doing, and absolutely love this church. I have not been in another church on a Sunday morning in 16 years. From the day we walked in here, we knew this was the place, and absolutely love it. So, enough about me. James.
Well, I'm James Brown. My wife is BJ. We have three kids. My daughter taught here for a couple of years, and she has my only little grandson. He's 14 months now, so she's raising him, and she hasn't gone back to teaching. She probably won't for a while. My middle daughter is 25. She did work with I Am Second. Y'all heard of that? She Nashville had two employees. She was one of them, and she loved it. She really loved it. But her and I are in business together right now, trying to get things started in Nashville, and she loves that equally as well. And I've got a son that's 18. He just turned 18. I can't believe he's 18.
I know.
But anyway, he's 18, and he's finishing high school online and our homeschool, and then he's taking three college courses, and he's in a hurry going somewhere. We don't know exactly where, but they're all blessings. All my kids are blessings. And we're from L.A., Lower Alabama, for those that didn't know. Did you? Lower Arkansas, maybe. But I lived there for 45 years in Dothan, Alabama. It's in the southeast corner. And we both were raised Baptist. We dated at her Baptist church. Left Dothan, came to work actually up here, close to up here in banking after I finished college, and started going to a Baptist church called Whitesburg Baptist in Huntsville, and they were one of those churches that would raise your hands. They were a big church. They were bigger than First Baptist in Huntsville. But I'd never been in a church where anybody raised their hands. In fact, at First Baptist of Dothan, where we went to church, you would dare clap. You just, that back then, you would never clap, you know, when somebody sung or anything. You'd just not do that. Why?
Yeah.
But you wouldn't. It's not allowed. Anyway, in this church, they clap and they raise their hands. And we were like, it's just, I don't know, it was just different. My boss at the bank was an usher, and I was almost the same age you were. I was about 23 or 24 and had always struggled with my salvation. You know, every time there's a just as I am, you feel like it's for me all over again. It's like I've done this like 12,000 times now. You know, you feel convicted to go up again, and it's like, come on. So I grabbed him, and, you know, we went to a little back room, and I told him my plight, and he said, let's settle this. And so when he was done, you know, my attitude was, God, I have done everything I can do. If I'm not saved after this, it is all on you. I've done everything I can do. So when I left there, I never had that feeling again that I needed, or I was being convicted that I wasn't saved every time there's an altar call. which was a huge relief for me. So anyway, that's at Whitesburg. Didn't like the bank. Go back to Dothan. We're like, where are we going to church now? Can't go back to First Baptist, you know, because you know what I'm saying. I can't go back to, you couldn't go back to the Catholic Church, you know. It's like, you felt like I need more of something. It seems like I had tasted a little more of something. What was that? Well, anyway, we wound up going to a First Assembly, and we found more of something. But it was the rocking church. It was the grace of that era, that area. It's just everything going on was there. And anyway, it was a great experience. We were there 8 or 9 years, and then my daughters wound up in school up here at Belmont. I had sold a business and was really kind of, I had 45 years of Dothan, and that was enough. So we wanted to move, but didn't know where. So when they started coming to school up here, we go, man, we loved it. You know, so many other people love it. And so we bought a house. We built a house here and settled in. And we went to one church for about 2 months. And it was great. The kids' church was fantastic. But we just never felt that was our church. Mm-hmm. Didn't know what this was. We actually live across the street, but we didn't know what this was and never paid attention to it.
Just a big old barn.
Just a big old something. We didn't know what it was. I've heard several people that live in the area that said the same thing. They started coming here and never realized what this was.
Yeah.
But they lived around here, which is kind of funny. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we stepped in church and we knew that was it. You know, I didn't even have to say, honey, what do you think? You know, because we knew. And then for the, we've been here since 2009, 7 years, 7 or 7 years, eight years maybe. You know, it's one of those things like almost every Sunday we'd leave going, that was the best service. That was the best one ever. And you do that over and over and over. But anyway, that's just the way we feel about it. We just love it. Couldn't imagine being anywhere else.
I walked out saying that on this Sunday for sure. Who was here this last Sunday? I walked up to Steve later and said, like, at least another hour. I could have gone another hour with that. It was just great. Great reminders. Yeah, they did an awesome job. If you didn't see it, go back and watch it. It's Steve and Sarah both did the message, and it was wonderfully done. So I recommend you take a listen. All right, so we're going to jump into stewardship. So what is stewardship? Stewardship is giving of not only your finances, it's giving of your time, your talent, and your treasure. So we're going to cover all of those. The majority of it's going to be spent on finances, but we're going to definitely touch on our talents and our treasures. So James is going to start us off and talk about why God wants us to give.
Does anybody not understand that question? I mean, I guess we all get that question, right? Because some people really don't. They have the kind of an attitude that God doesn't need your money. He's got cattle on a thousand hills. What does he need our money for? And it's really not that God needs your money. It's about the giving part, not the him receiving it. But anyway, in your book, everybody's on the same page, I hope. My stewardship reflects my commitment to discipleship. Number two, giving makes me more godly. I read that and I was thinking, that struck me as kind of odd. You know, that giving makes me more godly. But you know, there's a lot of truth in that. And we'll get to a point later that I want to talk about that relates to that. But giving draws me closer to God. You know, and the verse for that, Matthew 6:21, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. It's really almost impossible to give your money to something when your heart's not there. giving is the antidote to materialism. And I witnessed that with my dad. My dad is 84 now. He's got dementia. When he was a truck driver, he was very giving. Everything he had was everybody's. You know, if you wanted to borrow his old RV, you just jumped in it and took off. He was glad that you could borrow it. Anything that he had, he had a little lake house when you wanted to go. It's all yours. And he loved you enjoying it. Then he and I were in business together. When he started getting a little change in his pocket, the giving side of him started drying up. Because the more materialistic he got, the more it was all about what he had, and it was no longer about what he was giving away. Uh-huh. And he's still that way. And it's really sad. And that's what that giving is the antidote to materialism. You can't give away money when you love money at the same time. And it was a sad reflection, seeing that happen to him, as it does happen to a lot of people. And most of you probably know somebody, you know, that's happened to. It's very common, really. Giving strengthens my faith. How many have had your faith strengthened through giving? What? Do you remember any circumstance? Did anybody want to share? Any time that you can remember that you were deeply affected by giving?
Well, just generally through my life, as long as I've been a Christian, a lot of times when money gets tight, I find and then something pops up and there's a need for money, and I give it, I get blessed.
More so when you notice it, more so when money's tight on your end.
Seems to come back, you know, manyfold when you do that, as opposed to your regular church giving and things like that, and the other ministries you support.
Anybody else? Giving is an investment in eternity. Giving happily to those in need. And always be ready to share whatever God has given you. By doing this, you'll be storing up treasure for yourselves in heaven. It is the only safe investment for eternity. You know, there's a verse that says, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. And I've never questioned that kind of thing. When you give, it's not the kind of thing where you'd go on the street corner and tell everybody, look at me, I just gave this big amount of money. Because to me, I've always understood, you just received your blessing in full.
Right.
And who wants to receive that kind of blessing? I built a church one time, and they invited me to come to the inauguration service. And at the end of the service, they had everybody that was giving to the church come up and form a line and give the check to the person in the front, and he would go, John Jacobs, $500, and everybody's, yay!
Gosh.
Like, what are they doing? And I'm thinking, do they not read the same scripture I read?
Yeah.
But anyway, I can never forget what the feeling that I had when I saw that.
Shower.
Why does this? You don't think Steve will do that anytime soon?
If he does, run.
Giving blesses me in return, as you said. It's all about giving. It's not about God receiving it. It's about how good it is for you to be the giver. Giving makes me happy.
All right, next section, how God wants me to give. I give with the right attitude. Number one, I give expectantly. Number two, I give willingly. Number three, I give cheerfully.
And number four, I give sacrificially. I want to park here for a minute on sacrificial giving. You know, we have an opportunity coming up on Good Friday to take a sacrificial offering. I want to back up and give you a little bit of history about that. Were any of you in the most recent membership class just a couple of months ago? A few of you? Yeah, Pastor Steve talked about it a little bit there. But this church has a huge reputation for sacrificial giving. Way back when we were, 20 years ago, in the gym over in Hillsborough School, they needed the school needed a playground for the kindergartners to go out and play. And Steve went into the principal one day and said, you know, how can we help you? You're blessing us by letting us use this place. What can we do to help you? So they let that need be known. Steve went to the congregation, which is probably only about 40 people at the time, and said, hey, we're going to just raise the money for this playground to be built. And then they even pitched in and built it. But with those families, they raised all of the money needed for that playground, just gave cheerfully and sacrificially. When we moved into this building, 2003, we were here for about a year or so, and we had a conference called the Resource Revolution. The late Pastor James Ryle, who recently went to heaven, taught that here. And it was a Friday night, Saturday conference. On Friday, he taught all about sacrificial giving. Sacrificial giving is giving until it hurts. You know, it's not just looking and going, okay, you know, I've got X amount of money in the bank. I'm going to give half of that over to the church or whatever. It's giving, like, all that you have, no matter what you're making. You know, you could be making just barely getting by, paycheck to paycheck, but really looking and seeing, you know, I'm going to give this to the Lord and trust that He's going to use it and He's going to bless me in return. He's just going to do that. So he taught that night, and then he challenged us. He said, you're going to come back tomorrow, and I want you tonight to go home, and I want you to pray about what you're going to give tomorrow. It wasn't a choice. What you're going to give tomorrow, sacrificially. And we didn't know what the cause was going to be for. He just said, you're going to give tomorrow. So we went home. I prayed. My wife prayed. We got back together, talked about it, and said, you know what? What's the Lord putting on your heart to give? And lo and behold, it was the exact same number. So we went, okay, confirmation. We're going to go ahead and give that. And it was a stretch. It was a sacrifice. It hurt. So we did that, and there were 35 families represented in that place, about 60 people or so. And in one offering, not knowing where it was going to go, we raised $58,000 in one offering with just those families. The next day, I don't know if you remember, Daniel Pearl was a journalist in Iraq that was beheaded, right? We brought in his widow and his daughter, and we didn't know them. We heard about them and brought them in and gave the entire $58,000 plus what we raised on Sunday morning to them, just as a blessing to them.
And Steve didn't know that at the time he took the offering.
Steve didn't know. Yeah, Steve knew.
Oh, okay.
Steve knew who was
okay.
coming in,
oh,
and James knew who was coming okay. in. The rest of us did not know who was coming in. But after that offering, my wife and I, that very week, received tenfold what we had given. The very next day, I got a brand new job. It was a promotion with a substantial increase. Got a brand new vehicle. And then we had also borrowed some money from my in-laws for my wife's business. They didn't know we had just gone through this conference. And later that week, it was on a Thursday, she called and said, you know that amount of money that we gave you? Debt's paid. All of that far exceeded what we gave. So God immediately blessed us. It was incredible. And there were stories like that all throughout the families that had given. The next year, we did the very same thing. Same conference, there were about 70 families represented on that one. And we raised $176,000 in one offering with those 70 families. Again, not knowing where it was going to go. And the very next day, we brought in a family who, they were traveling home from Florida on vacation, were in a fatal car accident. The husband and one of the children went to heaven. And we brought in the widow, and I think there were three or four remaining children. connection through another pastor at another church, brought them in and gave them the whole $176,000. We didn't keep a dime of it. And whatever we raised on that Sunday morning as well. So again, huge reputation of sacrificial giving. Well, fast forward a couple of years, and we were in the sanctuary. This is 2006. And if you can picture the sanctuary and the adjoining rooms right around it, that was the original church building. So the building that we're in right here, where breakfast is served on Sunday morning, all of those youth rooms, that was not there. We quickly outgrew this church when we moved in 2003. We immediately moved the high schoolers down to the barn at the time. It was within 6 months, I think, they had a room, and then they didn't have a room right after that. But when they say when you build it, they will come, well, everyone came. It's like, okay, they're solid now. They've got a building, so they must be doing well. So all of a sudden, we had this massive growth. Well, anyway, we knew it was time to build a building. So beginning of 2006, Pastor Steve laid out the vision for the year and said, at the end of the year, we're going to have a sacrificial offering. We know we need to build. We're already in the process of getting plans together. November, it was Thanksgiving weekend, we're going to have one service. We had two services at the time. We're going to have one service, and it's going to be a sacrificial offering. Want you to pray about what you're going to give, prepare what you're going to give. He taught on giving over a 4 or 5 week period, and we were believing for $2 million in one offering, and that was with about 1,500 people total, including kids at the time. So I don't even remember how many families that was. But anyway, that was a big goal, $2 million. We came in, had a worship service, it was beautiful. Had a worship service, had a crate at the front of the altar, and families came up and just gave sacrificially. Came up together, prayed over it, cried over it, put it in there. There was a line out the door of the sanctuary just for, you know, a solid like hour and a half, people doing this. So we counted the money during that time, and Pastor Steve said, everyone come back at like, you know, 2 o'clock or something like that, 1 o'clock. Go have lunch, come back, we'll have a total for you. He didn't know what it was. And we counted it, brought it back, and then we put it up on the screen one digit at a time. And we started from the right and went left, so we threw up like an 8. And then we threw up a 5, so it was like 5-8 in a decimal. And we just kept moving over digit by digit. And we got to 800 and something thousand. And he was like, what? He couldn't believe it was like 800 and something thousand. He had no idea. He had no idea. It was, and we've got this on video somewhere. It's beautiful to see his reaction. It was great. And then the next digit came over after about 10 seconds. We just left him hanging out there for a long time with anticipation. And it was a 2. We raised $2.8 million in a single offering. It was incredible. It was incredible. It definitely met the goal for what we needed to build that next addition. And then we did the same thing in 2012 in the building that you're sitting in right now. We raised $3.8 million in one offering on Good Friday 4 years ago, I guess. 5 years ago. It was 2011, excuse me. So, again, huge history of doing that. The people that, you know, participated in that sacrificial offering, we're planting the seeds and preparing for all of you sitting in this room right now. So we're going to have this opportunity as a church on Good Friday. So I want to challenge you, prepare your hearts right now. Listen to God. Listen to what He might be telling you, what He's preparing you to give, and come in and give with expectation. Because we're going to be building a foundation for what's going to be happening far into the future of Grace Chapel. I'm happy to say Grace Chapel has increased not only in finances, but with people every single year for the past 25 years. God has His hand upon this place, and it's very much due to the leadership that we have here, for sure. But it's based on the people that are in this church as well, that are willing participants, not just sitting in chairs. They're giving of their time. They're giving of their talents, and they're giving of their treasure. So excited to be a part of it.
The first assembly church I was telling you about, we had the same kind of scenario, except things were kind of askew. But the pastor had kind of gotten his things out of whack and eventually got booted out of the church. by the assembly, not by the congregation. We also had a big, we had about 1,000 people. We also had a big sacrificial Sunday with 1,000 people given. And we raised 58,000.
A little different.
I'll never forget that. Because he absolutely did not know what to say.
Yeah.
He was so frustrated. But it was just, it's just a, and I can appreciate that so much more now, knowing where he was in that time of his life and knowing where we are and where Steve is, mm-hmm. and where Steve worked so hard to position us and to teach us and to get us to the point where we understand giving and sacrifice and relationship like we, like most of us do. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
it's a hard line to walk. And if you've been here for, I guess, maybe 3 years or less, I don't know that you've ever heard Steve preach on giving at all. He's stayed away from it. He does it when the Lord urges him to do it. You know, he doesn't like to put it out in front of, there's churches that will just constantly teach on that and kind of browbeat people with it. But he doesn't do that. And he'll be the first to admit, and some of you have heard this before, he doesn't know what people give. He said it on Sunday morning, I think, during the offering. He has no idea what people give. It gives him complete freedom to just fire away and just preach the word with no problems, because there might be, you know, Daddy Warbucks in the corner that gives so much money, and, you know, he's living in sin, and Steve knows about it, and he feels convicted when he gets up there because he doesn't want to address that issue that that man's struggling with and might walk out the door. He has no clue. It's great. Gives him complete freedom. So I love that.
And if I understand it right, when the church raises all those figures, there's not any gigantic checks in there. It's just a lot of people giving sacrificially. Mm-hmm. There's not any $1 million checks in that offering.
That's right.
You know, when we went to Israel last year, Steve, we gave the 12th, I don't know what you may know, we gave the, there's only 12 air bases in Israel. And they don't spend any money on facility over there. It all goes into ammo and munitions and planes. And so their kitchen was kind of a wreck. So Steve offered, you know, the commander, the colonel's Jewish. So Steve offers to build them a kitchen and just pay for it. Mm-hmm. And it just really took that colonel back. Mm-hmm. He said, "What are they doing? Why? You don't know who we are. Why do you guys want to come over here and spend that much money to build our kitchen?" And it was just that simple thing that just knocked him off his rocker. Mm-hmm. And just fantastic. Giving God my time. Time is a gift. I submit my time to God so that He can order my day for kingdom purposes. I spend my time based on my values. My values determine my priorities. And God has determined that one day in seven is to be the Sabbath. And I want to challenge you in that one statement, or not that one, but the one prior. I hope you don't leave here all, and all you hear is how God has blessed the church financially. Because there's a whole lot more to what we're saying, what Jay's saying, than that. And giving and stewardship is a whole lot more than giving your money. And part of the success, a large part of the success at Grace, is the amount of time that y'all steward in serving others and involving yourselves in ministries, whether it's mission work or whether it's the youth or whether it's whatever. It goes on and on. And again, you may go into it thinking, well, I need to know where they need it. You know, who needs the help the most? Well, do you know the answer to that? You do. You know, you need the help the most. Anyway.
Think of it this way. There are, I think it's 168 hours in a week. Okay. If you were to apply the tithe rule to 168 hours, that's how many hours? 16.8 hours a week. Do you spend 16.8 hours with the Lord? Either praying, at church on Sunday, serving. You know, where does your time go? The average Christian definitely does not. I like to think at Grace Chapel we're a lot higher than that. Got some great people here. But when you think about that, the average Christian comes to church and that's it. So it's a couple hours a week. It's not even 1%, barely 1% of their time. So where does your time go throughout the week? Think about that. You know, is it sitting in front of the TV? Is it spending time at the ballpark with your kids, which is great. It's great to support our kids' activities. But where does your time go, and who's the priority in that? So I challenge you, if you're not at that 16.8 hours or more, you know, think about what you can do to increase the time that you're giving over to God on a weekly basis, on a daily basis. Is that where we're at? Okay. Next section, giving God my talents. Number one, God has uniquely created me and given me various talents, abilities, and giftings for his glory. Number two, I ask myself, what are the natural abilities God has given me, and what are my acquired skills? Number three, I am a steward who will one day give an account of how I've used what God has given me. I want to give you an example of using how I use my talents outside of church. You know, I'm here full time. Obviously, what I'm doing is ministry, and I'm giving a lot to the Lord in that regard. But I like to ask people, how are you blessing the Lord and how are you serving him outside of maybe being at church? I'm a huge volleyball player. I've been playing for 30 years, absolutely love it, will play until my knees won't let me play anymore, for sure. If I'm not spending time with my family, I am on the volleyball court, for sure. I'm also very competitive. And before I was, before I gave my life over to the Lord, I might not have been the most healthy of opponents. Might have taunted, you know, might have not been the best sport playing. But over time, people that were playing with me, because it's kind of a small community of players, after I gave my life to the Lord, they saw a transformation in me. And that opened up doors for me to share what that transformation was. So when I'm out on the court, I'm very competitive, but I do it in a healthy way now. And I use that as a means to reach people. It's not uncommon if I'm out there playing and someone's having an issue, I'll pull them off the court and we'll pray right there in the gym. You know, and that gets people's attention. So I do that. I'm not boasting about that. I'm saying I'm using what the natural talent that God has given me and the desire to play this sport to reach people. So I challenge you, in what ways has God blessed you, and what talents has he given you that you're using to reach people? Anyone have an example?
Something happened in the store this week. We've got a Western store 400 miles from here that I bought after we moved back. We moved up here, and I bought a store back there. I didn't talk to Jay first. He would have suggested I not do that. Anyway, we moved it. It's been in the same place 35 years, and we moved it. And my wife hardly ever works in the store. I go about every 2 weeks. We had a customer that was there. And like I say, she has a slight history in retail, but it goes way back to when we met. There was a guy that was irate, young guy, military guy that was just irate. And something he ordered didn't come in, I don't remember. And we'd just moved, so we got 14,000-foot store and stuff is just scattered everywhere. And it was chaotic. And it was our grand opening weekend. And she's trying to calm the guy. Some of the staff said, that guy's, what's up? That guy's got, you know, something, he is ill. So my wife went over, BJ said, she was trying to ask him, what was wrong with him, what happened, and he said, I buy these Roper shirts. I've been coming in here for years. He spent $2,800 at Christmas at one time, the same guy. But we didn't know that till later. So he's a real customer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been telling him these shirts are coming in, and they just didn't come in. And he said, well, he said, and she apologized, we've been moving, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, well, look, he said, my mom just passed away, and my dad has cancer, and I forgot what his prognosis was, but it was bleak. And they didn't, you know, his situation, he just opened up right there. And unlike her, she said she was able to share because her mom had just passed away with liver cancer. And she said, do you mind if I pray with you? And there's 100 people in the store. And she said, you know, do you mind if I pray with you? And he goes, absolutely. So, so she found a little spot and they prayed, and she, and then after they prayed, you know, he goes, I just feel so much better. I just feel so much better. Thank you so much for doing that. Yeah. And she found out later that this is maybe the best customer we've got. You know, mm-hmm. Isn't that cool? Anyway, I thought it was cool.
Whether you know it or not, people are watching you all the time, especially if you profess that you're a Christian. They want to see how you're going to handle different situations. So they're watching you. So use that. Use that as an opportunity to reach people, for sure. And I encourage you, even out in within the church itself, if there's something that you're passionate about, if you, you know, if you love tech stuff, if you love video and audio, we have places for you to serve. If you love working with kids, we have places for you to serve. So, you know, once you've gone through steps and you're ready to serve, we're going to talk to you. We'd love for you to pitch in, because this is not, Grace Chapel is not a cruise ship. It's not someplace where you can just kick back and receive and receive and receive and receive. It's a working vessel. We want you to pitch in. We want everyone to work together and to make the ship move.
Hey, Jay.
Yes.
Steph and I, we came and volunteered at Grace Night. Friday night.
Awesome.
And then Steph's a preschool teacher, and I teach some here in Williamson County, so we deal with kids all day, every day.
Let me stop you for a second. Grace Night is a respite program for parents that have special needs kids. So once a quarter, we have this, so parents can go have a date night and leave their kids here, and, you know, we love on them. So go ahead.
And not strictly for Grace Chapel members.
Right.
Anybody in the community. There was, I think, 42, 43 kids here that night, special needs and siblings. But just see families come in on a Friday night before Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. drop kids off for 4 hours, and we cried up. We had bounce houses and gym and bingo and karaoke. We did more karaoke Frozen that night. Yeah.
Let it go.
But just to see the family, you know, to come back and see their kids had a great time and they were well taken care of and parents were, you know, rejuvenated and recharged and got a night out and the kids had a better night. And we happened to walk into church Sunday morning and the family that we were buddies with, their son and daughter, they were sitting behind us in the aisle.
Cool.
And they're like, hey, it's you guys. How are you? Yeah. Like, how'd the kids sleep? Like, they were out before we got out of the church parking lot. They slept till 8 Saturday morning, which is the latest they've ever slept. It was so great.
Yeah.
So, talking about talents and stuff, you know, we like kids. I've got two boys, and one is on the autism spectrum, so yeah. It's nice to still be able to go out and give someone else a break and not just worry about yourself at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Find a place to plug in and help. You will be blessed over doing that. I bet you got more of a blessing than the parents did by volunteering. Yeah. Thank you.
Number one, ultimately God is the one who provides me with all that I have. Provides. My possessions belong to God. He has provided them for me to use and steward. My treasure includes proper care of my body. I thought that was strange, too. But you know what? When you count your treasure, it's seldom that most people would think that their body would be a treasure, even though it really is a huge treasure. Mm-hmm. You know, you think, well, maybe your money, but when you're dying, you don't think about how much money you got. Mm-hmm. When deciding where and whom to give, I listen to the Holy Spirit and obey. I pay special attention to those relationships that God partners with me and those who share a common vision for kingdom advancement. And maybe you don't pay that much attention to it. I would encourage you to do that. Maybe you think that most of the people that you know or that God sends around you are coincidental. And I found that to be true here over and over. Some of them I didn't care for all that much.
Holy sandpaper.
I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, some of them just, you know, you just didn't jee-haw with. You know what jee-haw means, right?
I'm assuming gel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they turn out to be some of the best relationships that we've had, you know, or those that you really didn't, you know, you wouldn't have fostered on your own. Offerings which are given above the tithe may be given to the poor, to the needs of those in God's family, and to the advancement of God's kingdom and purposes. We helped start a vineyard church way back, and just the pastor and his wife and my wife and I and another family. And so I was the good, I shared my 2 cents worth on tithe about every other week. I'm sure it was fantastic. And I was telling an ex-pastor friend that was a good friend of mine. I don't know how it came up. I was just telling that. And he said, you know, he told me he didn't believe it. And I met him at that first assembly. He didn't believe in tithe. And I, for some reason, I never could question him about what he meant. That then, but that went on for years. And it dawned on me one day, I saw him again, and I said, look, you said a few years ago you didn't believe in tithe. What did you mean by that? Because that bothered me. And that's what he meant. He didn't believe in 10%. He believed it's way more than 10%. And I was just very relieved that that's where he was headed in that, because I didn't know. I didn't know. And it bothered me for a long time.
Yeah. So we're going to move down to that, the supplemental material down below, and just talk about the truths about tithing. Number one, what is tithing? And tithing is a tenth or a part. It's the first tenth. What's the purpose of tithing? The purpose of tithing is to teach you to always put God first in your lives. Number three, when do I tithe? And that's going to be on a regular basis. Now, you don't need to get all legalistic about it. If your paycheck comes on Friday, do you need to write the check on Friday? No, you don't need to do it right then. But you're going to make a mental note of this is how much I made and this is how much I'm going to give. But you're going to do that before you pay, you know, all of your bills, typically. But are we going to look at you and on Sunday and say, oh, you didn't put a check in the basket and I know you got paid on Friday? No, it's between you and God. So when you tithe, it is up to you, but as a rule, 10% of your gross income. A lot of people think it's net. It's gross income. It's your first fruits before taxes. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to the Lord what is his. What's the difference between a tithe and an offering? Again, a tithe is the giving of the first tenth of my income, and an offering is anything in addition to that, above that. So if you want to give to Mercy Ministries or, you know, K-Love or whatever charities that you might be involved in, that's above and beyond your tithe. Your tithe is what goes to the storehouse, Malachi 3:10. It's the temple. It's your home church. Anything above that. So if you go visit another church, you know, you're visiting family and you go to their church and you want to make an offering, go right ahead. But that's not considered your tithe. You'll notice Pastor Steve say very often, if you're visiting here, we don't want you to give. The message, the worship, everything is a gift back to you. We're not expecting people that don't regularly come to Grace Chapel to give. If they do, that's great, but we don't expect it. Where should I tithe? Basically where I worship. All right, the rest of the material there you can kind of read on your own. I know we need to stop and break out into groups, and you guys can formulate questions and come back and bombard us when we get back together. But John, any instruction for them?
No, I think you're all pretty good at getting into groups.